Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good Sunday morning, everybody. Welcome on in. It is Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. We will react, of course, to last night's big boxing match. It was a huge night for boxing, man. You had the first big fight we've really had since the pandemic. You know, we've talked about it on this show. It feels like it's just been Deadsville as far as talking about the sport. Just what the realities of it is, you know, you have promoters who want pieces of the gate. It's a sport that hasn't been able to roll forth without making competitive matchups that people will watch. And I think they were also at a crossroads because I think that they thought when they first came back, it was going to be enough just to have sports back for people to tune in. And I think that was the case early on, especially I think the UFC benefited from that. But now as we're seeing, you know, sports really has to step up their game. You know, we've seen ratings take a dip pretty much everywhere, especially the closer we get to election season, all that type of stuff. So with that being said, last night we had a huge boxing match for all of the lightweight belts. And it was exciting. You know, Vasily Lomachenko against Teofimo Lopez. We have a new champion as a new undisputed champion as Teofimo won yesterday on every judge's scorecard. Unanimous decision for him, 116-112 on one of them, 119-109 and 117-111. All went for Lopez. You know, I don't want to harp too much on the 119-109 card. I feel like that's being a sourpuss at a fun party. Like, you're just going to be the guy who's like, but what about this card? Yeah, it wasn't a good card by Julie Letterman. You know, I don't know, you know, why, you know, I think she gave round 11 to Lomachenko and the rest she gave to Teofimo Lopez. Hard to impress, I guess. I was right in line with the 116-112 card. In fact, I actually looked at that card and matched round for round with that particular judge. And it was, who was that? Tim Cheatham. Yeah, Tim Cheatham had it 116-112, and I mirror his. He gave 1 through 7 all to Teofimo. That's the same way I went. 8 through 11 all to Lomachenko, and then round 12 to Teofimo. And that's exactly how I scored it. A lot of people were getting mad at Andre Ward for his draw card. Draw's not that hard. If you have a 116-112 card, draw's not that hard to get to. If the two rounds you'd have to in particularly circle to get to draw would be rounds 2 and round 7, which I believe he both gave to Loma, and that's how he ends up there, because you flip the 8-4, gets to 6-6. It's not that hard. And then 117-112, the big difference was Steve Weisfeld gave round 9 to Teo. He didn't give like the whole late run to Lomachenko. So that's how the judges broke it down. You know, I think the big stories out of this one, I think that Teofimo, I said this last week, I compared this fight a lot to, I compared this fight to Errol Spence versus Mikey Garcia, where I think we think of a guy as one thing, but maybe he'll show something as another. Now, I picked Lomachenko to win this fight. I said he was going to win by a decision, so I whiffed on that one. But I did say that, perhaps we're going to see an element to Teofimo's game that we did not see or haven't seen, because it's very early in his career. You know, we had Andre Ward on this week, and it's such a big leap for a guy 15 fights in, 23 years old, to jump into these types of waters. And he didn't look shook at all. He very, very composed start to this thing. You know, and they mentioned on the broadcast how Lomachenko likes to start slow on these fights, which he certainly did, but he did it to a next element. I think that there was a conscious effort by them that they wanted to let Teofimo let out the gas a little bit, but I think a couple of things. One, I think they probably, clearly they waited a little bit too long on that regard, and they also, I think, probably figured he was going to go for broke a little bit more, and he really didn't. He was very composed. Jab was working well. He kept finding that home at the body. So he was doing a lot of racking up rounds. You know, I think you, it wasn't, you know, it really did take a while for this fight to get cooking because there wasn't much resistance from Lomachenko. You know, he really did seem like he was trying to size things up, eye things up. It didn't seem early on like there was a great speed advantage for him either. And I do think that that swung once we got into those later stages, once we got to rounds 8 through 11, you did really see a big hand speed advantage for Lomachenko, but he just, you know, either wasn't willing to pull the trigger early on or just didn't see those openings or didn't want to risk it. You know, I'm sure he's going to be kicking himself, second guessing himself, all that type of stuff. But Lopez, I mean, he kept finding a home for that. He kept finding a home for the body shots. You know, which I think is smart for a guy when you're taking on a guy like Lomachenko. You know, he kept saying in the lead up to this, people treat him like he's a god. They come in there mentally beaten. He did not. You know, he was just going to find the simple openings. You know, he took a lot of, I think in this fights, you know, for the home run hitter, he was in there and it was satisfied going in there and just going 4-for-4 with four singles. I think that there was no real need for him to find like he needed to really impose his will. And if anything, the guy who had to take the home run cuts by the end of this was Lomachenko. And then you get to the spots of, well, he's got to take out a bigger man. He's got to chop down the tree. And I think that he probably felt pretty good about it, you know, in 10 and 11. But, you know, it's a big boy he's got to take down. And the thing that was impressive mostly to me was round 12 from Lopez. I like the fact that Teo was able to go out there and really put a stamp on the fight because you don't want a performance like that. You don't want the long-lasting image to be, oh, did he just rack up rounds and, you know, just kind of, you know, did Lomachenko run out of time, you know? And you know, it is what it is. A win's a win. But I think it was good for Lopez to have that lasting image of he's taken all the belts and he took that last round from Lomachenko. He really broke Lomachenko's will. You know, Vasily didn't really have a lot of firepower left. He seemed a little bit worn out. And so I think that's good for Lopez that he, even though clearly he didn't need the round on the scorecards because he was comfortably ahead. So whatever, he would have won 7-5 on his closest card, clearly would have won easily on a Julie Letterman's card. And on the 17, he would have been fine. But I still think it puts a good stamp on the fight for him. And if he is going to be the face of this division or if he ends up going up, it'll be interesting to see. He said he might move up to 140 or he might go and take on Devin Haney. I think him versus Haney would be fun. You know, Devin's going to fight in a couple weeks down here at the Hard Rock. He has a piece of the 135 championship. He, you know, Lopez is, I guess, the franchise champion. You know, you can never figure out. WBC, they make up rules as it goes. But I think it would be fun for those two just to go on because I would like to see, I talked about this with Andre this week. I would like to see the young guys. There's so much potential here of these guys, you know, living out their rivalries. Now, the one good thing is I don't think this is, you know, he needed to get this fight in with Lomachenko probably soon because I don't think that, you know, Teofimo is going to be in this division long term, but he still is 23. So we still have time for him to go and fight Devin Haney if they're able to make that fight. You know, but at least if he doesn't, Devin Haney's still young too. So I still think there's some move up for him as well. But all in all, you know, for Lomachenko, I think people will probably be, you know, was this finally the fight where, you know, did the layoff affect him at all? Was that part of the slow start to him? And then also just, you know, did he finally meet somebody who was at the crossroads of size and skill who, you know, he just couldn't take out? He definitely couldn't mentally break him, which was great to see. And it seemed like it was teetering that way. That's why I think that last round was so important for Lopez, to not just feel like you beat a Lomachenko who maybe was a little bit rusty, that was out of the game, and that you kind of, you know, ran out the clock on. Like, the fact that he went and took that last round after you had been mentally beaten a little bit, you had taken some shots, you were getting whipped a little bit in the back half of the fight, you went and go and took that performance. So I think that was something that was super impressive from his standpoint. Lomachenko also, you know, I just think that the output was just a little bit too, you know, the thing that's going to be interesting is, and I think that he's going to kick himself too, is, you know, he did have to take some risks. It even got, you know, he almost had to ugly it up a little bit. You know, we saw the headbutts, we saw a little bit the holding and hitting and stuff like that. And I definitely don't think if you were going to say, well, who's going to come in there and do that type of stuff, you probably would have thought, oh, it's usually the naturally bigger guy. But people, you know, this is one of those performances where you really get a sense of Lopez being more skilled and more well-rounded than people gave him credit for, just because he's steamrolling fools at 23 years old. And those are always the fun performances to go watch, that he's able to bring all that stuff to the table. So ultimately, really good performance by Teofimo. I think he's a great guy to have as the face of the sport. The sport's going in that direction, man. You know, I think one of the things that's been it's been frustrating that we've been in this spot where, you know, it really felt like 2020 was a lost year for boxing outside of the Fury Wilder rematch. You know, everything else has kind of just been at a standstill, other than a couple of fights sprinkled in here and there. One of the things that was interesting, you know, they announced this week on the broadcast that Terrence Crawford, he's going to be taking on Kell Brook. And they were like, oh, he's taking on the best guy that's available. And that's kind of garbage. Like, you know, we saw what happened tonight happened for the lightweight division. That needs to happen for the welterweight division. Like, Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence, they need to fight in 2021. You never know when this stuff is going to dry up. Sports has all seemed very finite in these crazy times. And I think that all this jockeying that people do is a huge, huge waste. You know, look, Teofimo's camp could have probably sucked dry that IBF title and, you know, taken on mandatories here and mandatories there and been fine. And he would have headlined on ESPN cards and all that type of stuff. But what huge guts it took for that camp, you know, to really throw their young fighter into the deep end, a father, you know, who clearly talks a lot and bit a lot and his mouth wrote a lot of checks, but his son cashed him tonight. You know, his son had plenty of balance in the bank to back up his father's words. And now you have a position where this guy has the opportunity to really be a star of boxing for a long, long time, or at least be the root of a lot of rivalries that we could start with either him, Devin Haney. They could ever work out anything with Gervonta Davis, Ryan Garcia, all these types of big names that are big on social media, that could talk a lot of trash, that could hype a lot of fights. It was great. And I think that is the thing that's exciting about these matchups, is we have not only a great, talented young champion, we have a charismatic young champion, and the potential for him to have a lot of rivals who are also charismatic. I saw Devin Haney tweet out, let's see, he tweeted out, I bet you they won't mention my name on the broadcast. He was right about that. They did not, but it was, let's see. Afterwards, he goes, Lopez Haney 2021, let's do it for all the belts. Also said, I've been said Loma was whack. Well, listen, you didn't take him on, so let's not get crazy to that stuff. But you know, Devin's gonna fight in a couple weeks. He's gonna fight Yorioki's Gamboa. He should win that fight, even though, you know, I love home team, I love Gamboa. He should win that fight. And if they could do that fight in 2021, it'd be fantastic. I, you know, it's going to be a matter also of who's going to sign whom, I guess, and who they can get to the right side of the tracks. Will it be, you know, getting Devin to ESPN, which honestly they should really do. Like, if you're going to talk about, like, you know, sending Lopez over to the zone or sending Haney over to ESPN, like, the way it should go is Devin Haney should get his butt over to ESPN. He should do the car wash. He should go on First Take, all that type of stuff. Just a monster for him. You know, it's, you know, I know DAZN probably won't want to let him go. Maybe they'll want to do some crossover, whatever. I don't know. But I really hope that that boxing goes in this new direction of not letting these stupid holds up. Like, get everybody involved. Get these guys fighting each other. Get these guys in the ring with one another so we can, you know, be able to see these guys. If it's not him, then I guess we're going to see, I think, George Kambosos fights in a couple of weeks. What does he fight? The 31st? Fights Lee Selby, and I think the winner of that's going to fight as the mandatory for one of Lopez's belts. So, you know, it's great, though. It was a great night for him. Congratulations to Teofimo Lopez. Lomachenko will be interesting. I don't know. You know, he's only 32. They made him seem like a grandpa in there as far as, like, and it is weird. Like, everybody else in this division who seems to be blossoming is very young. Lomachenko's 32. That's not old. But, you know, maybe it's a case of, does he want to go down in weight again? You know, just to reestablish himself. Are there more fun matchups down there? It seems like he could be a little bit more dominant down there. I think we have seen with him going up, he's shown tremendous blood and guts, but he has not been as dominant as he was when he was making people quit in the midst of the ring. And I think that's what we want most from Lomachenko. So it'll be an interesting fallout, but this night belongs to Lopez for sure. We'll take a quick break. We'll get into a little bit of what went down last night in UFC as you had Brian Ortega taking on Korean Zombie and get into a little bit of Khabib versus Justin Gaethje. We're back after this. Welcome back, everybody, to Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. We roll on. We'll get into a little bit of the UFC card from last night. So Brian T. City Ortega was taking on Chan Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie. Grudge match, long time match in the making, and they were squaring off for essentially what was going to be the number one contendership for the featherweight belt. Weird spot that the featherweight belt's in right now because Volkanovski is champion. Max Holloway is the number one ranked contender in that division. He has lost twice to Alexander Volkanovski, although controversially, especially in the last one. But it doesn't seem like he is going to get that third shot anytime soon. You don't know what happens with Max at this point. He has beaten T-City before and has been in a spot where, you know, he is, you know, in a lot of people's minds, the best featherweight there ever was. And so we're at the spot where, you know, there is opportunity here. There's a new possibility for a contender. And so who was it going to be? We haven't really known with Brian Ortega what we were going to get because he is... hasn't been in the octagon since he lost to Max Holloway, and that was December 2018. So that's a long time ago. We're almost pushing 2 years on that, and so a lot of questions with him. But he's still young, you know. And I think that we were seeing this with Brian's career as the fights were going forth, especially that Frankie Edgar fight where he knocked him out. Nobody knocks out Frankie Edgar like that, and so you thought that this guy was going to be a real danger to Max Holloway. But maybe it was just a little bit too much too soon. You know, he's only 29 years old, so it's at a point right now where maybe that was too early in his career. So what was he going to do with all this time? Korean Zombie, we know, is crazy dangerous when it comes to these types of matchups. As far as, you know, he can never count him out in the midst of a fight. He is always going to live true to his nickname, come forward and bring a lot of danger when it comes to these matchups. You know, he also hasn't been in a year's time, so it's been a little bit for him, but he's as dangerous as ever. You think about all the fights that he's been in there with, even since his break. That Yair Rodriguez was a legendary fight for ages. Hinata Moicano beating him, Frankie Edgar. So this is a fun matchup. I was looking forward to it, but it really wasn't a close fight. It wasn't. Brian showed a lot of versatility on those feet, man. He looked as polished as you could ask a young man to look at his striking. Versatile, was really just catching Chan Sung Jung with everything. Catching him inside, wasn't allowing him to be comfortable. His jab was a super big weapon in this one. Hit a spinning back elbow at one point. Was trying to hit with lead elbows at certain times. He brought out the whole bag of tricks for this matchup, and looked in a lot of people's minds, I think, coming out of this matchup, like Chan Sung Jung really couldn't get going at all. He ended up getting cut over his eye pretty badly. They had to stop to check on it, and it really wasn't ever in doubt. It was just a matter of the clock running out. Brian Ortega did feel like he took the foot off the gas just a little bit as the thing looked like it was in the bag. But even in the midst of that, anytime that Korean Zombie got close to him, he was peppering him right in the face and wasn't going to be an issue. So he solidifies himself, man, as a title contender going to take on Alexander Volkanovsky. And I gotta tell you, man, if this is the guy that we're going to see in the featherweight fight, if he shows up, like in a lot of ways, we saw a guy who had some real striking capability going to the Max Holloway fight, but wasn't as refined, was still all very new to him. This mostly was a one-trick pony kind of fighter. And now he's going in there with a guy in Alexander Volkanovsky who, you know, he looks like he's going to have a nice advantage of versatility. You know, he's going to always have that option. If it gets up against the cage, if he does get taken down, he's going to be able to go to his bread and butter. But the striking just looks so much more polished. You don't fight for 2 years and you use all of this time to work the way that he works. People already thought that this guy was title quality, and now he just looks very, very refined. I think this guy's a real danger, man, a real danger to Alexander Volkanovsky, who, you know, could be in this spot where he's coming into this next fight looking to prove a point, because I think there's a lot of people who are doubting his title reign because of the last win against Max Holloway. And so that's always a dangerous thing, too, if you have a fighter who is worried that they got much to prove against the rest of the world and all that type of stuff. But, man, Brian Ortega just brought it all tonight. And you think, like, if this guy is that good, like, who is beating him? Because, you know, there's a lot of guys who are good in this division, but this guy might be better in the submission game than anybody in the 145 division. If you put on top of it that he actually becomes an elite striker, super dangerous. And I think the other thing that's got to be the guy who's got to become the biggest Max, who's got to be the biggest Brian Ortega fan, I would almost put like an Apollo Creed Rocky alliance on this one, is Max Holloway. Because if you're Max Holloway, you're never getting back to the title shot if Alexander Volkanovsky has gold around his waist, at least in this title reign. So if you're Max Holloway and you've spent all that time with Alexander Volkanovsky, especially with all the tricks that he puts in there, with all the with the late round pushage that he's able to put forth, you know, what gear can he go find to? Because that's really been the story, is that, you know, Max has been able to get in early on Volkanovsky. Well, actually, it was kind of a flip on. The first fight, it was him coming on late. The second fight, it was him taking on early. So he spent 10 rounds in there with him. If I'm Brian Ortega, that's the first call I'll make it, if that's not weird for him. Because, you know, you want all the intel you can to go beat this guy. And then if you're Max Holloway and you have Brian Ortega as champion, that obviously puts you in a much better spot to get back to the title picture for yourself, because you've beaten him before. So really, really a great performance by Brian Ortega. Not the classic I think we were all looking forward to last night with this matchup. I think we were probably hoping for a little bit more of a back and forth, but I think it just speaks to what Brian is looking for. Will some people be wondering, is Chan Sung Jung, is he looking a little bit weathered? I don't know. He's only 33 years old. We're not talking about a guy who, and a guy who's also taken 2 years off, you know, to take military service. So I don't think that's the case. I just think Brian was at another level tonight. I really, really do. I think that he came in there with a lot more versatility than Korean Zombie was probably expecting, and probably, you know, didn't think that he was going to have to prepare for, quite frankly. On the other end of this car, we had Jessica Andrade. She got herself a big win over Caitlin Chikagan. Caitlin was number one at 125. So for Andrade, she puts herself in a really good spot. She makes her debut at 125. You know, this is the former 115 champ. Has fought at 135 before. So she looked absolutely fantastic. Hit her with a gnarly body shot going forth with this type of deal. And, you know, because of that, was able to put her away, get herself a big time win. And I would say right now, you beat number one. It's a marketable matchup, her versus Valentina. I still like Valentina to win that fight if they do end up fighting for the belt. But what I would say is Jessica Andrade has shown you that she is just always capable of coming up with the home run shot in so many ways. So I don't think you can count her out of that matchup. I don't think it could be one of these things where you look upon her and say, oh, Valentina is definitely going to dominate. I think that this is a special type of fighter who is so dangerous in there, especially in a 5-round fight. The more time you give her, I think we even saw that with the last Rose fight. Like, Rose is lucky that fight wasn't a 5-round fight, and if it was, maybe it would have ended up being really dangerous for her, but it wasn't. So she ends up getting herself the win, and Valentina is going to find herself in a spot with her hands full. But a fun matchup, I think. You know, we've been looking for something for Valentina, and I think that's a former champion taking on a champion. I like that matchup for Bullet, and I think actually could do some nice numbers for the UFC as far as people being interested. So that's the recap of what went down of UFC finale. Now, of course, coming up next week, we have a big one. Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje. You got UFC 254 coming at you from Abu Dhabi. Now, this is, I believe, just so I could get this correct for everybody, my schedule's been a little bit out of whack when it comes to the fight stuff, but I believe this starts super early next week, so everybody is just clear. Next week, if you are planning to watch UFC 254, be in mind, keep it in your head, 2 o'clock, according to UFC.com, 2 o'clock Eastern time for us down here in Miami, is when the main card starts. The main card starts at 2 p.m., so just keep that in mind. You know, make your plans accordingly. As you know, if you're going to be sitting down, if you're planning a big watch party tomorrow night, you may have to set aside some time in the midst of college football, because you have 254 going on in the midst of the afternoon. Now, why are they doing this? This is from what I understand, this is a Khabib thing. This is like they're trying to get prime time on that side of the world for him. He's obviously a very big deal, so that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to do big numbers over there. I do think this is a bit of a business risk from an American standpoint for the UFC, because you're talking about putting this in the heart of college football. Like, Big Ten, everything's back. And you're putting that, you know, so if you're starting at 2, let's say Khabib fights at 5, you know, you're putting that kind of in the heart of everything. You know, I always say, though, this when it comes to a fight, no matter when it is, you're only investing, you're investing at most a half hour. So at least just for people who just tune in for the main event, obviously, if you're watching everything like people who listen to this show do, it's different. But I do think that matters, is that we're in a spot where, you know, they're not investing the whole day. There's going to be a lot of people that just tune in to watch Khabib versus Justin Gaethje. But just keep that in mind. Next week, it is going to be super early if you are going to be tuning into this. And look, this is a fun fight. It's got a lot of what ifs to it. But I'm going to put something out for the best part of disclosure, the way I've been going about how I think this fight's going to go. And I want to make it clear that I put a big amount of praise on Justin Gaethje, his last fight. I thought this was a guy who came into the UFC and had peaked somewhat. Like, he came in, he looked like he was going to be super exciting guy, but wasn't going to win fights. and, you know, could make people pay, and it was always going to be fight of the night, but was he really a title contender? And this guy has just made himself better and better and better every time he goes in there. So that performance that he had against Tony Ferguson was one for the ages. It was under some weird circumstances where it was delayed a bunch. Remember, Tony did cut weight twice. So, you know, maybe people still want to take some credit away from him from that. But you beat Tony Ferguson, who in a lot of people's minds may have been the best lightweight fighter on the planet for the last 5 years. It's a great performance. And I think showed a lot. And he's shown a lot ever since his loss to Dustin Poirier. I feel like with this fight, I just don't see Khabib losing. I think that this man is just so damn good. And I've been doing the thing with him. I'm not one of these guys where I jumped on the Khabib bandwagon early. I've definitely hopped on it late, where I've always looked at some of these matchups and I'm like, all right, where can it really happen? Who's he really been in there that's tested him, though? You know, Michael Johnson even put one on him and gave him a little bit of danger. Who's he really been in there with? Ally Aquinta went the distance with him. I thought Connor would get the best of him. He did not. Dustin, you guys know I think the world of Dustin, so I'm going to, you know, think of a way for my guy to go and get that win. But, you know, each and every time, and especially the last two, he's not only found a way to dominate, but he's found a way to go finish the fight. And he has looked tremendous. He's had a really, really great title reign in his two title defenses. I just don't. And so for Gaethje, you know, I know they talk about this takedown defense that he's got and that he's got the recipe. I don't think, you know, and Dustin talks about this. Like, I don't think anybody, a lot of these guys practice with all types of fighters. You don't think that they go into these types of matchups and practice for, you know, takedown defense and all that type of stuff? No, of course they do. And so, look, I think Justin is fantastic. And yeah, he certainly has some real hurting bombs in him, but so does Connor. So does Dustin. Do you want to say that, you know, Justin is willing to go through the fire a little more? You think he's more willing to go through the fire than Dustin is? All right, well, I mean, those two, if we're going to do MMA math, those two fought each other, and Dustin was the one who came out on top. Also, this is a different kind of going through the fire. This isn't, you know, stand and bang with a guy at the center of the octagon for, you know, 15 minutes, 25 minutes. You know, you're really in this mental mind F that's like, I'm going to get brought up against the cage. I'm probably going to get tripped. I'm probably going to get held down for, you know, 3 minutes and 15 seconds, maybe 4 minutes. I'm going to try not get choked out. I'm probably going to get my arm pinned behind my back, and he's probably going to wail on my face. And so then it becomes you thinking about, you know, finding Hail Marys. You know, can you really shake Nurmagomedov off of you enough to really put some damage on him? And I just feel like I've gotten to the point now. I've seen him in these high level fights. He now is taking on the elite of the elite. I don't believe that Justin Gaethje is going to be able to do that. It's not taking anything away from Justin. I think he's fantastic. Again, he's shown such growth in his MMA career. And if he does, I mean, you're talking about one of the great career comeback stories that we've ever seen. But I think I've gotten out of the business of doubting Khabib Nurmagomedov. I'm still not the biggest fan of what I love Khabib. I love the personality. I love the persona. I don't love watching his fights. You know, I'm not like this, you know, this huge Khabib fan, but I am a fan of people trying to solve the riddle. And right now he's the biggest Rubik's Cube in the sport. Nobody can seem to solve it. And I don't think Justin Gaethje is going to be the guy to do it. I don't. And if he is, look, you guys know I acknowledge when I'm wrong, right? I'm wrong plenty, and I'm wrong often, but I feel like I've been the guy who's always been like, oh, you know, Khabib's striking is not that good. And, you know, even, you know, if he tries that striking bleep with Connor, Connor's going, eh, you know what? And the other thing is Khabib's actually looked pretty decent with his striking. You know, he hasn't, you know, he's not going to light you up, but he's so almost unorthodox and so unafraid to throw now that I don't even think you can look at that as some grand weakness. You know, it's not great. You know, trust me, he's not ever going to be the boxer that Connor or Dustin are, but it's good enough to get to where he's got to get to. And that's all he's trying to do. And so, you know, and I was same thing with Dustin. I was like, well, Dustin is great at takedown defense. He doesn't have a weakness and he still got taken down. You know, he had a great place where he jumped into a guillotine and almost got him, but he didn't. And I just don't think that there's going to be that margin for Justin Gaethje to go and get himself a win. So I don't think he's going to finish him. You know, I feel like Justin is too wily, too crazy. So I could see him, you know, taking the punishment the whole time, unless, you know, maybe Herb just sees his face turn into a balloon or something. I don't know why I'm assuming it's Herb Dean, but whoever the referee is, just see his face turn into a balloon and he ends it. But I don't see Justin getting the job done. I think this is Nurmagomedov's fight all the way. We'll talk a little bit more about this card, plus the news of the week coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Fighters Fury continues here. We roll on a little bit with UFC 254. Some big highlights from this card that we didn't get to. We did the main event last segment. Robert Whittaker's taking on Jared Cannonier. Big fight in this regard, as you have Jared Cannonier basically fighting for a number one contendership. Stylebender Israel Adesanya, the middleweight champion, has said that if Killer Gorilla ends up getting a win here, that he will fight him for the title next. And UFC has been pretty prone to giving Stylebender what he calls for. So big one for Cannonier. If Whittaker wins, I think he has to do something pretty spectacular to get himself back in line for the title shot, just because of how badly he lost to Adesanya. It would put two wins on his resume. Back to back, it would be Darren Till, now Cannonier. But I do think that he needs to like obliterate Jared for him to be back in the title picture. You know, although they did mention this week that just, it does huge business over by their part of the world. So maybe he doesn't, but I feel like we were talking about with the whole featherweight title thing with Max Holloway. Now this isn't two losses for him. If he loses to Adesanya twice, then you're probably completely taking him out of the picture. But that's what's on the line in the co-main event. I like Cannonier, man. He's really underrated, as some real hurting bombs in his hand. And I mean, he's been obliterating fools, especially since he's gone to middleweight. I think a lot of people were surprised that he was able to do what he did to Jack Hermanson, who kind of burst onto the scene with his win over Jacare Souza. So, you know, he beat Anderson Silva in Anderson Silva's last fight, took out David Branch in his middleweight debut. So he's really had a nice resurgence since coming down from 205. He's a very, very impressive fighter. And then Robert Whittaker is an absolute monster. You know, he has such versatility in his strikes. I wasn't surprised that he was able to get the job done against Darren Till like he did the last time. You know, but, Darren is still finding his footwork from all the early hype that he had in his UFC career. But we know that Robert Whittaker is super tough. Two wins against Yoel Romero, you know, stopping Jacare, stopping Derek Brunson. The guy's a monster. He really, really is. And so this is a tough fight. It's a really tough fight to pick with a big stakes on the line. You have also Alexander Volkov taking on Walt Harris in this regard. Walt is looking to bounce back from his last fight where he lost to Alistair Overeem. He got TKO'd in that one. And you have, in the same regard, Volkov looking to get a win too. So one of these guys, unless there's a draw, will get back into the win column. Magomed Ankalaev taking on Ion Cutelaba in the other part of the main event. And then in the co-main, you got Stefan Struve, the skyscraper. He is going to be taking on Tai Tuivasa. And Tai Tuivasa, who was another one, he had like, I mean, sky was the limit with his hype when he came in. The shoey man doing the drinks when you know, people were learning about the shoe. We had him on. I remember having him on the radio because he was like such a hot item tied to Ivasa. But he's fallen on hard times. I think he's lost three straight. So you're probably looking for Ty, you know, maybe in a must-win situation for him as far as where his UFC career goes, because he's not only lost, he's lost to some you know, not very recognizable names. Not that Stefan Struve isn't that, but you know, we'll see. It's been tough. So even his Andrei Arlovsky fight was pretty tough for him. So we'll see what comes of the Shoey man, Bam Bam, Shoey Vasa, all that type of stuff. Should be an exciting card for sure. We did get news this week regarding the matchup between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. Now it does seem that Conor, it's funny, man. Like he's got all these demands, but then he doesn't seem to bend to the UFC. It's a very different time. Typically the UFC would be bending to his demands. Because he was like, oh, it must happen in 2020. And then he goes, ah, you know what? January 23rd, let's do it. The interesting thing, though, is he wants it at Jerry's World Cowboy Stadium. And, you know, they are doing a fight there. They're doing Errol Spence, Danny Garcia there, which I think they're doing with limited fans. Texas is rolling in the fights, man. So I'm really excited about this. Now that it's here, I guess all the, you know, hopefully contracts, there's no snafus there. I would assume that we're doing this thing. One, I hope they care that, you know, I saw an interview with Dustin Poirier this week, and he made a great point on Ariel Helwani's show where I guess he heard that Michael Chandler's already making more than him. They just signed Michael Chandler as a free agent. And that's bull crap. Like, you know, listen, I know that these are different economic times and everybody's crying poor, all this type of stuff. I know Dustin Poirier is not asking for the sun and stars when it comes to his money. That dude deserves to get paid a lot of dough for his fights. He is just as entertaining as, you know, Cowboy Cerrone or any of these dudes that you throw out there that are just absolute slayers when it comes. He is a fight fan's fighter. And he's also very elite. He's also been very elite for a long time. So I hope that that's not a hiccup. And as far as this matchup is concerned, I just think that, you know, people are going to look at this and they're going to go and they're going to dig that fight up between him and Conor from back in the day when there was at 145 pounds. And I just think you could just throw it out the I really think you could throw it out the window. I don't think it serves a great purpose here. I don't think that it I don't think it's going to mean a whole lot. I think that you have a matchup here with these two. I'm trying to think, is it also at welterweight or is it at 155? Because I thought that they've been saying that it's going to be at welterweight. Yeah, John Kavanaugh says that it's going to be at welterweight. And I got to tell you, I think that's a stupid move. I don't think that's a smart move from Conor. You know, I know that they don't want to cut for 155. First of all, I think that you should be I know the thought of this is, oh, why do these fights at the weight class, you know, that they should be doing? You know, why do these fights at a weight class? Like, what's the point? Like, there's no belt on the line and all that type of stuff. But you know, ultimately, that is the division that you are fighting in. And maybe you don't feel like, you know, Conor McGregor has a lot to prove upon when it comes to his 155 stats. But, like, his win against Donald was at welterweight. It wasn't at 155. And so, like, you know, some people, they look at it and be like, yeah, but Donald was a ranked, you know, lightweight. Conor is, too, we know. But, like, all right, well, decide. Like, are you going to be a welterweight or are you going to be a lightweight? The other thing is, I just think that Conor, the bigger that he's been, has been a much, he's just been a less special fighter, the bigger that he's been. I think that at featherweight, I think there's an argument he's the greatest featherweight of all time. I know people get crazy with that because he never defended a belt, but I just think that the run that he went on to get to the belt was like a buzzsaw through butter. It was so damn good. 155, he's had some impressive performances, but it wasn't what it was at featherweight. And I just think that, you know, for this guy, you know, if he's going to be true about getting into this title at 155 pounds, I feel like the fight should be at 155 pounds. And I also think it benefits him to be 155 pounds, but they're going to do it at welterweight. He feels like, you know, he's going to get some kind of monster size advantage on Dustin Poirier. I don't know, man. Dustin's a thick kid. He's a thick kid. And you know, he's super versatile. He's got a lot to his arsenal. I just think that he's going to get a completely different Dustin Poirier in this matchup. I don't think those head games are going to work. I don't even know what kind of McGregor we're going to get. It's been such a long time. Obviously he's going to be able to always go to, I slayed you in, you know, this matter of seconds and whatnot. And sure, I'm sure that's got to be an annoying thing for Dustin Poirier to know that you lost in, you know, about 100 seconds to Conor McGregor. But even still, this is a matchup where you have a guy that has been way better for so long. I mean, that fight was so long ago between him and Conor McGregor. It was, what are we talking? It was back at 2014. And we saw this with Dustin, too. Dustin had one of these situations pretty recently with Max Holloway, where, you know, he beat Max Holloway back in the day in 2012. But, like, you know, Max was a teenager. And then he beat him completely differently the second time around. I just think that, you know, and for Dustin, you know, for me, Dustin's the guy at 155. It's like he's gone and he beat Dan Hooker. You know, he fought Khabib. He lost. You know, I guess there's still an argument for Tony. But, you know, you look at all those top guys. You look at those top guys. He's the one who's coming off the win. Let's bring up the 155 rankings right now. The 155 rankings of guys who don't fight at 155. Yeah, one is Gaethje, interim champ. Dustin is number two. Tony's three. He beat Dan Hooker, who's four. Connor's five. And, you know, to me, I just feel like, hey, if they're going to fight for a championship, if they're going to be fighting for this. So if you have a 2 versus 5, I think it's a legitimate number one contendership fight. You know, I think it should be at 155 pounds. I do. I really do. I know that, you know, Connor may get his way on this because, you know, that's what he does. Although recently he has not been getting his way because he hasn't fought all year and he's not going to fight all year. So maybe they could tell him, like, hey, bro, you know, you want to fight for the 155 strap? Otherwise, why not just fight for the number, you know, why not just start boosting your ass up to welterweight? You know, what are we doing at that point? So we'll see. I think it's a fun fight, though. I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad that they were able to make that happen. And then to follow up on another thing that we've been talking about on this show, one, we got the news this week that Anthony Joshua is going to officially fight Kubrat Pulev. That is going to be going down on December 12th in London. Not sure if fans are going to be in attendance, but that fight will be going on, so he will put up his heavyweight straps for that. And if he gets through, Pulev, it looks like the next fight's going to be him versus Tyson Fury. You know, there continues to be talks from Gypsy King that Fury is not going to fight Deontay Wilder next. You know, I don't know if this is completely decided upon, but it looks like they're moving in that direction. If it's not it looks like that's the direction they're moving in, that they feel like the thing has expired. I don't know who Tyson Fury is going to fight in December. You know, he maintains that he wants to fight in a couple of months. I don't know who that ends up being. Cause I couldn't imagine they want to go too big of a challenge. And supposedly it's going to be a homecoming fight. It's going to be in London too. So you have those guys that fight in the same month, and then I would imagine that we're probably looking at like a June date for them being back in the ring fighting for the Undisputed Heavyweight Championship. But I like this, man. I like the fact that we're having these guys fight for all the belts, put it all out there, give this stuff some credibility of who a champion is, what they are, instead of all these things like Dragon Balls, like scattered up amongst the earth, you know? Let's get them all focused in and being at one place. That's what we should have when it comes to the sport. That's our show for this week, everybody. You know, have a great rest of your week. Stay safe. Looking forward next week to UFC 254. We'll have a breakdown for you coming up with that next week. Same time, same place. And then we'll get ready, of course, the week after that, a couple weeks after that, we'll have some action coming on down here, which is cool. So lots to cover in the fight world. It's starting to really, really heat up again, which is very exciting, of course. Everybody have a great rest of your Sunday, and we will talk to you next time. See ya.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.